Jai Guru, everyone.
Jai Guru.
Okay.
Welcome to the next episode of our podcast about the autobiography of a yogi. We're going through the book line by line. We've been in chapter 12 for a bit now, and I think we'll be there for a while. It's a long chapter. It's the years at my master's hermitage. And today we are at part 6, and we're going to talk about miraculous healings. And here Lauren and Priyank, we're 3. There's no Chris today. How are you guys doing?
Good. Very good.
Nice. That's good. We have like a nice Easter weekend. So I think it's Good Friday today. So we are very, very much in a spiritual mood already, I would say. And let's jump straight into it. Our first line that we're going through, it says, one afternoon during my early month at the ashram, I found Sri Yukteswar's eyes fixed on me piercingly. You are too thin, Mukunda. So this is how it starts. Priyank?
Do you think if in the Western audience, this would be very...
especially here in LA.
Very, not even politically correct. Would it just be considered an unkind... It would be an unkind comment, wouldn't it? You're not allowed to comment on one's appearance. But of course, I think most people in the West, even now, if it was your guru, then you would probably accept this kind of criticism. But in India, it doesn't have to be your guru for you to accept anyone, passerby on the street, shop aunt. Owner.
That's anyone can say you.
It. Anyone can say it, and it's not considered as like the height of rudeness that it is in the countries where all of us are living and the cultures. So that's something that you should bear in mind.
In Germany, the people are known for their straightforwardness, and especially when you're like in a small countryside town, you would get this kind of stuff. Like, you would get people telling you, "Oh, you look great today," or like, "Oh, what's up? You have something." Yeah, you get comments, not always. Yeah.
It is Priyank. I don't know, because I feel like I've had this comment my entire life from people in the UK. And sometimes it'll be people I don't know that well, and sometimes it'll be people I do. And people seem to be quite free with the thin comment, which is quite interesting. Perhaps maybe the way we take it would be different. Yeah, I think if your guru said it, you'd be like, okay, all right, I'm listening.
Yeah, I've had it as well. I was very thin for the first 19 or 20 years of my life. Yeah. So
did you take it as the height of rudeness?
No, but you can't say it now. Back then, maybe perhaps it was different, but you definitely can't say it now, can you? Mm. You can't just like go around commenting on
people. People do, Priyank, even now. I'm not kidding. I get it quite regularly.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You just have to learn not to take it to heart or realize the love behind the words, you know.
Realize the love is a good way to do it. I feel like especially people, like if it's people that I've known for a long time and elderly people, like my elderly relatives, from them I would get it the most often. I would get comments. Michael, you're too thin. No, not really that one. No. No, but it's, I think in Mukunda's case, it's different because he looks sickly thin, right? So he then says it struck a sensitive point. And isn't that if somebody makes a remark on us and strikes a sensitive point, then it becomes really difficult to take it in a loving, positive way, right? Because you yourself have those thoughts, and now they get reconfirmed by someone else. That makes it worse somehow. Yeah,
I remember Brother Bhimananda. He was talking about being sensitive and overly sensitive to us once, and he was saying if we do find that we are that way, then we should reflect, because underlying is some flaw basically in our in our the way we think about ourselves or our expectations, perhaps. So if you fall into this category, then we should respect. And here it's a case in point, isn't it? Because Mukunda's got these years of experience where he was, you know, not being happy with himself and his appearance.
Yeah, you mentioned it, Priyank. Like he says, he's been afflicted with dyspepsia since childhood. So he has been carrying this around with him. And when you have a disease, usually you don't feel like this is something that's my fault. You feel like I'm the victim of this, right? So when somebody comments on it, it feels unfair because it's something that you cannot control, really. So I can understand why he says it's a sensitive point. And he said he has tried many different medicines and none of them have had any effect on him. And then gives him a real encouragement, Sri Yukteswar, to Mukunda. He says, medicines have limitations. The divine creative life force has none. Believe that you shall be well and strong. So there we go. This is the spiritual medicine that came. Yeah, Priya?
Yeah, just before that, he said that, he tried loads of tonics, which is a common thing for Indians, I must say.
Okay.
But I think it's probably crept into Western civilization as well now. Number of tonics and potions and creams and medicines.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the USA, isn't it? In the pharmaceutical arena. Rampant.
Don't take them away. Yes.
But yeah, I also found that he said occasionally he would sadly ask himself if his life was worthwhile with a body so unsound. And elsewhere in the Divine Romance, he talks about this as well, how he was and how he felt. He said, before Guruji's blessings, Mukunda says, my body was so terribly thin that I looked like a bean pole with a coconut on top.
Oh.
Yeah, I was actually probably, I think we've all seen pictures of Mukunda when he's, meditating and he's really, really thin. I pretty much had exactly the same physical appearance as Mukunda, but I didn't have dyspepsia, just naturally that thin, because I only like to eat chapatis. I didn't like to eat anything else. there's a question about where Sri Yukteswar says, believe, i.e. your creative life force has no limitations, the divine creative life force, and that if you believe that you should be well and strong. The need for a strong physical body is important. We know that, in the Eightfold Yoga Sutra's path, which we ascribe to, asana is one of them. And in God Talks with Arjuna in chapter 5, verse 11, the footnote, he describes it as, asanas are postures designed to unloosen pinched nerves, purify and strengthen the life force, and make the body supple and hardy to withstand long meditation. Mm. So if he wasn't capable of withstanding long meditations, then he might be justified in saying before, when he was saying, is my life worthwhile if my body is so unsound? But obviously we know that he did do long meditations, didn't he? So I think take what he's saying with a pinch of salt here. But I did do my asanas this morning before my meditation and my energization. So I can ascribe to the validity and the truth in those statements.
Yeah. Like you said, Priyank, we don't know. He probably was able to have perfect meditations even while being thin. But Mukunda has really felt that this is a problem, and very drastically, he thought that his body is not in good shape because of that. And that's something that maybe stopped him from doing certain things that he might have otherwise done. When you constantly think of, oh, I could do this, but my body isn't well, then it might be something, a limiting factor. So he was probably trying to take this off his mind. Also, I don't know, like in today's society, there's like, when I look at his young pictures, he looks thin, but he doesn't look so thin that it feels sickly. I feel like he looks like a kind of healthy-ish young boy. So maybe the ideal for what is a healthy body has shifted over the years. But dyspepsia does sound like a severe disease, so definitely. And Shiyoteshwar found it worth to heal him from it. So it's definitely something to bring up. And yeah, the way he heals him is incredible, I find, because he doesn't do it secretly. He goes to him and he tells him, just believe that your divine creative life force has no limits, no limitation, and that will heal him. And I think that took quite a bit of understanding and mental flexibility on Mukunda's side to make this work. There was actually no back and forth, like, no, master, you are the healer, you have to heal me. But it was just okay, got it. And then he was healed. So that was pretty frictionless in there. And I think that's important. So I feel like if a guru wants to heal you and you don't want to be healed, or you are very much holding on to those thoughts that make you sick, then it's very difficult and it might be likely for the disease to come back later, right? So Guruji had no such problems, because Guruji said that, and then suddenly Mukunda started to gain weight and overcome his disease. He said, day by day, I waxed in health and strength. He does say it's by Sri Yukteswar's hidden blessing, but he said in 2 weeks, he gained the weight that he had always wanted to have.
Yeah. I read in God Talks with Arjuna something similar to this. So he writes in chapter 1, verse 1, by exercise and fresh air, the issues, cells, and red and white corpuscles become charged with fresh prana-laden oxygen. The system of energization exercises, which I discovered and developed in 1916, is most beneficial, simple, and non-strenuous method for recharging the body consciously with life-giving prana. This stimulation and electrification of the tissues, cells, and bloods helps to immunize them against disease. So something we do twice a day, hopefully all of us, and at least once a day.
Amazing. Yeah, it's so powerful. Those kind of one book that I want to, I mean, of course, the Bhagavad Gita, but one book, if you are really interested in healing, is that I would recommend everyone, is Scientific Healing Affirmations. Because Guruji goes into a lot of details there about healing. And some of the things are just very basic, right? Like right diet, no overeating, exercise, like you said, Priyank, fresh air. So very, very basic, very powerful methods. Get back to health. Yeah. So Sri Yukteswar then goes on. So first Guruji says he had witnessed Sri Yukteswar healing other disciples, people that came to him from actually diseases that are very severe. Like he mentions diabetes, epilepsy, tuberculosis, and paralysis. I find paralysis is incredible, because this is something where with our medicine we haven't made much strides yet to heal this. So you need to have real control of the life force to do repair your body like this. Yeah, Priya.
You've seen those massive Christian talks and gatherings where like divine healings take place, and they'll like a person in a wheelchair will come along and they'll just say some prayers, and everyone will pray together, and he'll get up and start walking.
Yes.
This is the image I had in mind, without all those thousands of prongs of people, perhaps not the stage.
Maybe what I saw is slightly different. Like, I saw a few YouTube compilations of American Christian healers where the pastor goes out and says, "Lupus, you foul devil. Lupus, get out of here. You have no place here." And then I don't know there are some of them where somebody sits in a wheelchair and then starts walking, and you never know if this is real or not. But yeah, does I seem, like the idea of it.
Does seem unplausible, isn't it? Because they hadn't walked for your whole life, suddenly being able to balance. And
it doesn't seem plausible. I mean, of course, if a realized master does it, totally in the realm of possibility, but it's just by having like an eloquent pastor doing it, that sounds less likely. Lauren?
Then again, it's the power of the mind, isn't it? Right? Mm. Like Mukunda fully believed when Sri Yukteswar told him, just believe that the divine has no limitations and you'll be well and strong. And he said, well, that instantly went into his consciousness. So actually, I suppose if you genuinely have full faith that you can be healed, no matter who says what, you will be, right? Mm. So even though it might not seem plausible because of who's doing it, actually it's probably down to the person who's being healed, because they're allowing their consciousness to be changed through the power of thought. It's actually amazing, isn't it, how we can live our lives one way in one sort of body, and then through our thinking completely shift. It's very inspiring.
Absolutely. I think the accepting this message is almost as much of a spiritual effort as healing someone. Mm. Right? Because I feel like if Mukunda would have gone to one of those pastors who want to heal people and would have told him, "Mukunda, you are healed. You can do it." Maybe he would have also been healed. I don't know.
Good impression, Mike.
Thank you. I've worked on it the whole week leading up to this. Yeah.
He does say here, "No other healer, and I had tried many, had been able to arouse in me such profound faith."
Right.
So it was down to Sri Yukteswar and his word, but the sentiment's still there, Mike.
I remember, is it what is the one of the things I say, the power of Christ, or the spirit of Christ compels you to,
may the power of Christ compel you,
that's it. You use that often, don't you?
So Sri Yukteswar then goes on and says that he himself was in the same situation of wanting to be healed. He was a bit, he had an illness and he lost a lot of weight during it. So he went to his master, Lahiri Mahashaya, and told him that. He told him, "I had this illness, I lost a lot of weight." And he was hoping that Lahiri Mahashaya would come back to him and say, "Oh, you poor thing, I will heal you right away. There you go. You shall be well tomorrow." But Lahiri Mahashaya takes a slightly different approach. He says, I see you've made yourself unwell, and now you think you're thin." And that was not at all what Sri Yukteswar expected. Yeah, Priya?
Yeah. He says in the writing, it calls him, Lahiri Mahashaya calls him Yukteswar. And then in the footnote, he kind of says Yukteswar wasn't called he actually used the word Priya back then, because he had not yet taken the Swami, he had not become a Swami, but Guruji used the word Yukteswar in the autobiography everywhere, just to be consistent. I thought it's such a scholarly approach to it, and also then just clarifying and justifying it rather than just letting these small details pass. But I thought it was quite nice to footnote that.
And I don't know if you were slightly confused, because didn't we establish a bit earlier that his name was always Sri Yukteswar and never just Yukteswar? Didn't they say that? Yeah.
Could be an error, one of our first errors in the autobiography that we've seen.
Didn't they say if you want to add Sri in front of his name, you would have to say Sri,
that's right.
Yeah.
It's not we, it's actually written in the, it was written in the footnotes as well.
Yeah, it's not, yeah, definitely not us. Yeah.
We haven't come up with this theory.
Yeah.
Good spot, anyways. Mike. 1-0 to Mike.
Well, we spotted something. We think we did. So he says, "I see Priya, you've made yourself unwell. And now you think you're thin." And that's interesting approach, because what he wanted to hear is just that he would create, he would say something like he said to Mukunda. He would, his Lahir Mahasaya would tell him, believe that God can heal you, and you will be healed. And then secretly Lahir Mahasaya will have healed him. But that's not the approach. But then he encouragingly adds, he says, "Let me see. I am sure you ought to feel better tomorrow." And that now feels great, right? So you have your fully realized guru that you believe in. And he says, he's sure you will feel better tomorrow. And you feel great. Yeah, Priyank?
What too? Do you think he kind of said, like, "Come here, let me see in your eyes, open your mouth, go, ah."
Get the stethoscope out.
his eyes just twinkle, look up the Kudasta. Who knows?
Let me see. Yeah.
Let me see. And then he closes his eyes after saying, "Let me see."
Yeah, he probably did it standing like 10 meters away. Let me see. he didn't need that. It continues. He goes into this detail. He says, "My receptive mind accepted his words." His expectation was that he was secretly healing him, right? Yeah, Priyank?
Yeah, and this, as you know, we know what happens, and Lohir Mahasaya later says that, you know, it was really you and your own thoughts yo-yoing between sickness and health, which is, you know, we're going to talk about this in a bit, which made you alternate between health and sickness. And then later on, then he actually, you know, intervenes. But at this point, Lohir Mahasaya hadn't intervened. He was just letting things take their natural course. But Sri Yukteswar, in his sweet innocence, you might say, and faith, he says, "My receptive mind accepted his words as a hint that he was secretly healing me." This is almost like the, you know, when you think you are intuiting something, and then it turns out to be incorrect. Which can happen often, isn't it? You get caught up in how deceptive or how good your intuition is, and then life smashes you a little bit.
Yeah, it can lead you astray. Yeah, life smashes you. Yeah. Yeah.
You need to work harder. You think you have intuition?
Work hard. Smashes you. But you're a better man afterwards. Mm. Yeah, or woman. Yeah. And
You are they better.
Very, very true. Yes. And then the answer, it's so funny, I find, the way it's written, because it says, "Indeed, today you invigorate yourself," right? And I just had to laugh when I read that, because like, oh yeah, you're treating yourself today really well. You're good. Yeah. And Sri Yukteswar, he has his expectation, like you mentioned, Priyanka, he has a real, his expectation is, "I tell my guru I'm sick, he will heal me," right? And so now he feels really good. He feels like he got up in the morning feeling better, and he feels like, oh yeah, my guru healed me. I'm so thankful. I'm going to go to my guru now and thank him for it. So he went there and says, I feel much better. And he says, wow, today you invigorate yourself, as in you kind of made yourself feel better. And so he disagrees. He says that Lahir Mahasha, you have healed me. And then Lahir Mahasha, that's like where it becomes really interesting, because he goes like, okay, you put the ball back in my court. Then he says, yeah, yes, but your disease was quite bad. Let's see how you feel tomorrow, right? And that must have been something to hear, like, because usually gurus heal, right? They don't try to make you feel bad, but I think this is as part of a lesson that he's trying to teach, right?
Brent? Yeah, because it could have been the end at this point, but he re-adds the spice and then like adds this seed of doubt in poor Briyanath's mind here, and then he essentially then falls back, doesn't he, as we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like the mind has this inertia, or this habit of being the victim always, right? The idea that you can make yourself feel good and feel bad, and you have to take responsibility for this, is not natural. I feel like the natural thing is that maladies, they come from somewhere, and then a guru comes and heals you. That feels like the right thing.
You know, Lauren's really been applying these teachings herself quite well recently. Yeah, a few times her body has not been too well in the recent past, and she's always used like the best language. Like, for example, this body thinks it's not well. <You know? laughs> Other wow, she's really, really pushing the teachings into like speech and thought. Yeah.
Well, you know, if I think, oh, if I keep saying, you know, I'm not well, then you're in speech, I'm, you know, creating that link of, oh, I am not, but I am always well. It's just the body that's doing something different, right? But so perceptive of you to pick up on it, Priyank. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but this fits really well here, because here, Lahir Mahasha, he plays the ball back to Shirakteshwar and says, let's see how you feel tomorrow. We don't know. And then he said that, yeah, who knows, right? And then he said that thought, he took that thought, adopted it, and now he had this fear creep in that maybe tomorrow I will feel worse. There's this possibility, and my guru said it's possible, and suddenly this certainty that he had from the day before, where his guru said, I'm sure you'll feel better tomorrow, is gone. And now that might let the disease creep in again. And it does. And then tomorrow he goes to see his guru the day after. He tells him, I'm feeling bad again.
Before, when he was contemplating it, feeling the thought of the weakness returning, he said a shudder of cold fear entered him. And I thought that was really well described. And it also reminded me of when, you know, Babaji told Sri Yukteswar much later on that some hidden code about Lahiri Mahasaya's last days being near. And Sri Yukteswar just, you know, inadvertently told him what Babaji had said. And Lahiri Mahasaya understood straight away that, okay, my days here are not unnumbered, essentially. And then he said, like, he described it as something similar, like cold wave of feeling entered him, essentially. Obviously, I don't know the exact words, but it's so even for you might say Briyanath isn't a Sri Yukteswar yet, he's not a self-realized master yet, or he hasn't realized his status yet, and he had this cold feeling of the impending illness. And Lahiri Maharshi is, you know, a fully realized master and has established in himself, yet he still had this. So this illness and death can impact, we should take comfort that it can impact not just someone such as Brihadnath, but also Lahiri Maharshi a bit later on when he's, you know, going to exit his body. But he also felt something similar in terms of this dark force or dark energy. So we should console ourselves for if we feel bad in situations such as this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a natural reaction of the mind to that Sri Yukteswar is showing here, and I think that's why he is sharing the story, because it's very relatable. That's how all of us will probably react in this situation. But Lahiri Maharshi, it's also very comical, so that's why I think most of us enjoy the story a lot, because then he comes back to Lahiri Maharshi the next day and says, "So now I feel bad again," and then the Lahiri Maharshi looks at him like he goes like, "Okay, so you indispose yourself again," and then this was like the moment where Sri Yukteswar felt, okay, maybe there's something going on. This is maybe like a game, or is Guruji really trying to just make fun of the situation? And because he feels like he has done everything correctly, but this being, he doesn't get the reaction from his guru that he thought he would get. And then Lahiri Maharshi explains, he says really that it's his own thoughts that made him strong and that made him weak. And that is what he's trying to convey to him, that you have to actually control those thoughts. And maybe that's also, that's definitely a message for all of us reading this, but especially also for an avatar who has this immensely strong willpower to heal. And yeah, so he found it that if he just tells this lesson, then he wouldn't have to, instead of healing his disciple, he would kind of show his disciple how he can heal himself in that sense. And he goes a bit further. He says that there's a body, but there's also this force or this electricity, and there is God who is kind of holding it all together. And whatever our mind really wants to manifest will happen. And this is really the kind of message that we should take out of here, that it's really the mind over the body. The power of the mind is stronger than all the physical laws in there. And yeah, he does that. And there is really a question in here when we kind of heal ourselves. I don't know how people do that when you are ill. I'm sure you all go to the doctor and stuff like that, but do you guys do healing affirmations, or do you guys pray to Guru just to heal yourself, or do you do both? And what do you think is more powerful or more useful, or comes more natural to you? Because I myself, I'm the one who just goes, "Guruji, please help me." that's always my first reaction.
I like to use the scientific elements of Guruji's healing techniques. i.e. he tells us, you know, if you have a weakened or a diseased part of your body, then you can essentially recharge it and, you know, focus your mind and energy there, and feel the healing through your spiritual eye, you know, through the medulla to that part, feel, you know, direct that energy to that healing. So I like to practice this, but moreover, I also like to practice the thing that Lauren said that she was doing herself an injustice there earlier when she said it was just, you know, this body is sick, but I cannot be sick. But she also did something which Dishwar advises, I think later or in this chapter alone. She said, don't, you know, even if you're ill, don't ever acknowledge that you're ill. Then if you do that, then the unwelcome visitor will soon flee, right? So if you don't give any credence to or acknowledge the lack of health that you have at that given moment, then it will soon vacate itself. And on Sunday, I'm doing the Easter sunrise service. So I was just looking at the book Journey to Self-Realization, and there's a chapter called Resurrection, Renewing and Transforming Your Body, Mind and Spirit. And there's a really nice section here just on this very topic, which reads, according to experiments by German scientists, many people are better off because they do not constantly analyze their physical condition or suffer from mental discouragement because of their maladies. There is a close relation between the mind and the body. So destroying the consciousness of disease is vitally important. Many times diseases have left us, but our consciousness of disease brings them back again. Resurrect yourself from the consciousness of physical disease. God did not create disease. Do not find difficulties. Be unafraid. These are truths that have been preached in India from ages ago. Truth that shall make you free.
Beautiful. I can relate to this a little bit. Like I'm the kind of person, I hate being in hospitals because I always feel like it shows, it brings me in contact with people who have all kinds of problems, bodily problems. And then I suddenly feel like I kind of, my mind projects them on myself suddenly. Or for example, when I see TV shows about hospitals, there's like one show that I really liked like 10, 15 years ago that was called House MD. And I constantly, I saw myself like falling asleep, and I suddenly had to think about an episode of House MD where there was some kind of disease. And I was like, oh no, what if I have that? I also feel a bit pain here or whatever. So then I just stopped watching that show because of that. So I do feel that is something you have to be careful with exposing your mind to.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Like the power of the subconscious mind, it's really powerful. Like, and I think you're right, Mike, not watching those programs is probably very helpful. But, you know, I feel like even those really latent seeds in our own minds of, you know, like disease consciousness and things like that. I mean, I can definitely testify to that. Priyank's painted a lovely picture of me, which I'm not sure is quite accurate. You know, when we have those kind of even subconscious thoughts of sickness, right? If we're not really careful, they will come in. And it's something that I often find myself kind of battling against. And sometimes it wins and I get all, you know, back in the body consciousness, and sometimes we can kind of overcome. But yeah, it's interesting your question, Mike, when you were saying, you know, like what technique do you use? Like, do you just pray to Guruji? I think it depends, doesn't it? Like, it depends what it is, you know, because I know Guruji is very practical as well. And he says, well, you know, if there are things that can be healed with doctors, say like a broken bone, then of course, go and get healed by you know, a doctor who is an agent of God, right? But if there's something that you can heal yourself, then do it. So I think we need to use our discrimination, don't we? We don't want to wait there with a body of broken bones and just hope for the best, you know.
Well, if you have been mentally weak, Lauren, you've never shown it to me, because I've never seen you succumb to your subconscious doubts.
Well,
you always portray the positive aspect.
Well, Greg, when I'm saying these things, oftentimes me just, you know, trying to really affirm.
That's half the battle, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, appearances could be deceiving, Greg.
Me getting high praise, Lauren. I think people are going to start seeking you out when they need healing. Yeah,
it's wonderful, but it's not. It's not you.
We'll put one Lauren day. One of those big concerts, those Christian healing concerts.
Absolutely not. Definitely not the first to be doing that. If anything, I need to be at one of them.
Yeah, get healed instantly by Lauren. Yes.
Oh, I wouldn't mind going to one of those one day. I reckon the energy would be like really phenomenal.
Yeah.
Everyone's got so much faith, haven't they?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. I've seen this, and I don't know if you guys have ever been to Lourdes in the south of France. There's it's a place where people go when they pray for healing. It's a Catholic saint, Saint Bernadette, who performed miracles there hundreds of years ago. And there's like buses of people, mostly old people, and all kinds of people go there every single day. And there's a spring which people consider holy water, and you can buy the Lourdes water there in souvenir stores, and you can also go to the fountain, and yeah, that's a big thing. But that my point I was trying to make was that the atmosphere there is amazing, because there's really people really praying, really contemplative, and it's very nice. It has a really high vibration.
I went. My friend went there and got me some water when I was at university. Oh, yeah. And I got some water from the Ganga, and my Muslim friend had some water from the Zamzam well that's supposed to be very holy for Muslims. So we mixed it all into one jug. And
did it explode?
Exploded with healing energy. Yes. We mixed it all and basked in our shared healing prowess.
Yes, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, it was started bubbling up.
These three waters are not meant to be mixed.
They did not mix. They separated. that's too funny. Yeah, no, I mean that must have been really holy water.
I'd like to.
Do you still have that bottle, or is that gone? Is that like you moved out and then, yeah, or you watered the plants with it? Or?
No, we finished it. We all need it. Yeah, we all need it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. I would like to have some holy water at home again. That would be nice, actually. Where were we? We were at the point where Lahiri Mahashaya told Sri Yukteswar that whatever he puts his powerful mind to will come to pass. And then Sri Yukteswar, he started to understand the point that his guru is trying to make. And he asked him then, he was like, so even now, if I think I'm well, will I regain all my strength? Will all those good things come to pass? And the answer of a great master is then, it is so even at this moment. So I guess this was like an instant healing at this point. So it was. So he said, I instantly felt an increase, not only of strength, but of weight, which is physically, that's like even more of a miracle than feeling better. It's like you suddenly have more mass than before, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, even probably more of a miracle than walking after being paralyzed, isn't it? But this healing, there's a hidden line here which said, my guru spoke gravely, his gaze concentrated on my eyes. So it seems like that was an important part of that particular healing. So it feels like there was like a transfer of prana or some other life substance, life trons perhaps, in from that gaze from Lahiri Mahashaya to Sri Yukteswar.
And I like how the scene ended. He said, after a few hours at his feet. So I feel like this is the default in those higher ages ashrams. You have like your master sitting there somewhere in a parlor, and all the disciples, they sit there with them for hours and just meditate and possibly communing in some mental way. Just being in the presence of your master is probably more helpful than any talking you could be doing there. And yeah, so they were sitting there for a few more hours. Then he went home to his mom.
Yeah, it says after he was healed, the strength came back. He says Lahiri Maharshi retreated into silence. That is, and by my counting now, interiority moment number 11. Seems to be approximately one per chapter. So is this retreating into silence something that, and stillness, something that we're taught to do after each of our meditation practices, and live more and more in that space, as Lahiri Maharshi has just shown us. Yeah.
You have to remember that if I ever go to India and I talk to some sage there and he suddenly falls into silence, that I don't just get up and leave, but just stay there, meditate with them, be in their presence. I think that's the thing, that's the way to do it. Yeah. So now Sri Yukteswar, he leaves, he goes home to his mom, and she looks at him and can't believe that he looks so different. She says, "Are you swelling with dropsy?" And I did not know what dropsy was, but it seems to be some kind of swelling of the body. But what she meant was that he had suddenly gained weight, and it shows. You can suddenly see it now. And he said his body was now full and robust as it had been before the illness. And he, like, this is really, I mean, I don't know if you guys often spend a lot of time on scales, but from one day to the other, imagine you look at your app and it says plus 50 since yesterday.
I'd have to go on a very, very long fast at that point.
What did you have for dinner, man?
I just had to convert it because pounds don't really register in my head, so I had to convert it to stone. It's 3.5 stone. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Wow.
Hence, I said the miracle is quite high up there. That's a lot of that's a lot of prana.
Mm-hmm.
That is, yeah.
50
yeah.
pounds worth of prana.
Yeah. So Priyank said if he had that, he would start a long fast, but for Sri Yukteswar, they remained permanently. Like, no. Yeah, they just stayed. And yeah, after 8 years in England, I still have no idea how much a stone is in kilograms, but I know it's a lot. I think like 12, 13, 14 pounds, that's like a normal weight of a person. Is that correct?
10 stones is the normal weight of a person. Yeah.
10 stone is a normal weight? Okay.
Something, I think it depends if male body or female as well.
Let me see how much I would be in stone just for myself. No, I would be more than 10 stones. I would be 12 point something. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're like 8 foot though.
I am 9'7". Yes. Yeah. That's correct. All right.
Are you really?
No.
No, I was going to say, I don't remember you being that tall, Mike.
You don't remember Mike like leaning down when he's going to...
That's how I drive. I have to open the window.
Through the sunroof, Mike. Just looking out.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you just gained height, you know?
Yes, it happens often when you're in your 40s. Yeah. So he gained 50 pounds and they remained permanently, and that was what he wanted. So he was healed, and a lot of people saw that was a real miracle, because the people that saw him daily couldn't believe that he had suddenly gained so much weight. And that then in turn was a reason for people to become disciples of Lahiri Mahashaya, because Sri Yukteswar did not say, I use the power of my own mind to heal myself. But he said, no, my beloved guru healed me. And that was seen as a miracle definitely by many people. And they were then encouraged to make a spiritual effort and follow Lahiri Mahashaya.
He said a number of his friends changed their mode of life straight away. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering what modes of life you changed when you went all in with this path, perhaps. I remember when it was a year before I came into SRF, when I read the Bhagavad Gita, I then instantly changed like 90% of my life after just reading like a few pages, and must have been a past life thing probably, because anciently familiar the philosophy felt, even though I'd been raised in that religion and hadn't really grasped it till I read it myself. So yeah, I just, as I say, 90% of my life most noticeably was the detachment from emotions and people's expectations and anger and things like that. That was the most noticeable, but equally, or not as noticeable, was my like how quickly I turned away from like going after material joys and material stuff. It was really quick for me. This quite similar, so I could really relate to this sentence. A number of them changed their mode of life. But obviously I didn't become a disciple straight away. That took some many years later on.
I think in my case, it was more like a gradual thing, getting rid of certain habits. But I feel like if after you establish a spiritual routine, you then try to protect that from the outer world. And whenever you feel like things come in that draw you in a different direction, then you guard it and say, no, I don't want to do this. I don't want to mix with those people. I don't want to have those habits. And it kind of, it's difficult to describe, but I feel like there is always a way that gets you closer toward your spiritual life and a way that goes further away. And I feel like after a while, you keep choosing the right way. And then you change and you suddenly find yourself with thrown up by different people and not drinking alcohol and all kinds of things that you used to do don't happen anymore. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so there's Lahiri Mahashaya. Sri Yukteswar, he continues describing his guru. He says he was awake in God, and he was completely aware of his unity with the divine dreamer, and that he could basically do anything he wanted. Any change he wished to make, he could do. And then there is a really nice footnote about this that I'm going to read out. Says, It's a quote from the Bible. It's Mark 11:24. It says, "What things soever ye desire, when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. God-united masters are fully able to transfer their divine realizations to advanced disciples, as Lahiri Mahashaya did to Sri Yukteswar on this occasion." So, like, see that note that he says to advanced disciples, not to everyone. Mm, I guess you have to do your part and be receptive, I would say. So but it's still very encouraging. So once you are on the way on the spiritual path, there is your guru and there is sages that can help you like make progress faster. And that's, I find that a very encouraging thought. And then he goes on, he says there are laws, and then there are the laws that govern like the universe and everything material. And he says those are open for science to discover. He calls them natural laws. But then he says there's also subtler laws that are behind everything, and they can only be understood through the science of yoga, and not really accessible to the physicist. And this is an important point. And there's a section in Scientific Healing Affirmations. When you go to healing, there's a chapter called Healing Body, Mind, and Soul. Guruji makes a point about God's laws applied to matter and then acquiring the power over life energy. Would you guys mind reading them out?
God's laws as applied to matter. Salves may be useful for itches, sores, cuts, and so on. If your arm or leg has been fractured, it is unnecessary to give the life energy the trouble of joining the displaced bones when a surgeon, a child of God, and hence capable of serving as his instrument, can set them by use of his skill and knowledge of God's laws as applied to matter. If you can instantaneously heal your broken bones by mental power, do so, but it would be unwise to wait until you have attained that power. By fasting, massage, osteopathic treatment, chiropractic adjustment of the vertebra, yoga postures, and so on, we may help to remove or relieve congestion in the nerves or vertebrae and permit the free flow of life energy.
Next is acquiring power over life energy. On the other hand, mental cure is superior to all methods of physical cure because will, imagination, faith, and reason are states of consciousness that actually and directly act from within. They furnish the motive power that stimulates and directs the life energy to accomplish any definite task. Autosuggestion and various affirmations are useful in stimulating the life energy, but because a practitioner often employs such purely mental methods without consciously working with the life energy, thus failing to establish any physiological connection, they are not invariably efficacious. A cure is certain if psychophysical techniques are combined with the power of will, faith, and reason to direct the life energy and to reach the superconscious mind. In that blissful state of reality, one comprehends the inseparable unity of matter and spirit and solves all problems of inharmony.
Very nice. And I assume this was the kind of state that Sri Yukteswar was in when he was healed by Lahiri Mahashaya, and he just had to point him in the right direction to heal himself.
Yeah. Remind himself of his capability to receive the healing through his gaze.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I read somewhere that God and Guru are constantly trying to heal you and bless you and really just opening up, being receptive to this healing is really what we need to do instead of just constantly focusing on the material world, but opening ourselves up to become a channel of their blessings. Yeah, the last sentence is that of this part of the chapter 12 is, it is not the physicist, but the self-realized master who comprehends the true nature of matter. By such knowledge, Christ was able to restore the servant's ear after it had been severed by one of the disciples. And that also leads to a footnote about that story. And he says, the story of the Bible, it says, "And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. And Jesus answered and said, suffer ye thus far? And he touched his ear and healed him. That's from Luke 22:50-51. So that sounds also like quite the scene, because it sounds like he cut off the ear completely, right? And then probably Jesus picked it up and kind of reattached it. Yeah.
Really, yeah, powerful, powerful. Two powerful sections of the Bible there, aren't there? I really love that Guruji brings in all these various scriptures into these his stories of his life and his masters and Param Guru's lives. This one, it's really touching that Christ said, suffer ye thus far. Essentially, you know, you've suffered and you've suffered enough. Brings you a lot of warmth and comfort, doesn't it? Because in our reality, being born here, it's essentially one of suffering, as Buddha says. And he touched his ear and healed him. That's longing for that touch.
It reminds me a bit of that Babaji story, where Babaji burns one of his disciples that sits next to the fire, and then instantly heals him and tells him he had the karma to burn in the fire. But
I thought you were going to say that, you know, when him and his disciples were sitting on some ledge in some inaccessible part of the Himalayas, and some skilled Michael Langmire type had climbed all the way up there and tried to join the group. And then Babaji says, you know, I can't accept you in your present level of spiritual evolution. Yeah. And he said, if you can't accept me, I'll jump. My life's worth living. And Babaji said, carry on. And then he jumped, and then he put him back, and he said, I couldn't accept you then, but now you've finally let go.
Now you're fine.
Last withhold. Yeah, that was what a chess section, right?
Oh,
amazing. And what did he say then, Babaji?
Dero danda utao.
Then there you go. Yeah, nice.
Danda dero danda utao.
Dero danda utao, right? And then he left.
Magic. Yeah. I also thought you may also be referring to that. You're going to bring in that story where, you know, that police officer cut off that guy.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's very fitting. Yeah.
And then he himself took it and plopped it back in his place. That's
yeah, and he says, come back tomorrow or in 3 days and you will see me healed, right? Yeah.
Oh, so many great healing stories in this book, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I don't know do you guys think you would benefit if you would see a miraculous healing in your life? I was just thinking that.
I suppose we all would, wouldn't we, in some way? Because, you know, we'd be reminded of the possibilities of God. It reminds me of the quote in the front of All Spokes of Yogi, except you see signs and wonders, he will not believe.
Right?
We may believe in mind, but do we actually really believe with full faith that that's possible?
That would be certainly the benefit, because you'd hope it would really like cement your faith, and then you can just literally do as Guruji does, like, I'm not getting up from this meditation till I have direct perception of God and do all these fantastic things. Or the inverse could happen, where you could feel that you're not yet worthy. You haven't yet, I could be ill and I'm not getting these magical, amazing healings. Am I worthy? I'm not worthy. Maybe this isn't the path for me. Maybe God doesn't, I'm not in grace, or all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's two sides of the coin. I suppose that's probably what determines whether or not you receive it. If it's going to be beneficial for you, then it'll probably happen, right? And if it isn't your time, then you're not meant to go through that or see it or be in that grace to experience it.
Because Guruji says, you know, back in the early days, he would heal the body for some people, and then he'd find that people would leave after the body had been healed. So maybe it's also that as well. It's, you know, like you were saying, Frank, you know, how is it actually going to benefit you? Are you going to be benefited? by any sort of healing in the long run spiritually.
That's probably even worse, isn't it? Like, yeah, having the grace and then just carrying on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that happened that time. That man with the long hair, he didn't know what he did.
we did talk about this, didn't we? Oh, go on, Mike.
There's a story like this coming up about a disciple who is not super grateful for being Mildred.
It's easy to forget the blessings, isn't it? That's also
once you got them, you got to go like, okay, carry on as before. You could do that, but yeah. Maybe it's like if we don't experience a big healing, also means we don't have to. That's a good thing. Anyways, I think we've done justice to this part 6 of chapter 12. Anyone wants to add anything? No, then thank you to the listeners and to people who watch it on YouTube, and stay tuned for part 7 of chapter 12. Jai Guru.